Hello everyone, and thank you for joining today's webinar, Building a Scalable Data Science Platform with R. Presenting today are Mario Inciosa and Ronnie Berg, both of whom are Principal Program Managers at Microsoft. Before we begin today, I'd like to cover a few housekeeping items. Today's presentation will run for about an hour, and the webinar is being recorded and will be available on demand within 48 hours. A copy of today's presentation and recording link will be sent to you via email once the files are available. If you have any questions during the webcast, please enter your question in the Q&A widget on the left of your screen and click Submit. We'll try and get through as many questions as we can during the live broadcast. And without further ado, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Ronnie. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. Yeah, my name is Ronnie, and I work in the big data team, and I'm here to talk to you about an exciting new offering and how to build data sciences with R. And so jumping in, so R, what is it? Some of you may already know this, but for those who don't, R is an interpretive language. It was an open source project started a couple of years ago that gained tremendous momentum in the last couple of years in the community. It's effectively became the de facto standard for descriptive and predictive statistical analysis around companies and academia. It has a very vibrant community around the globe, and it has millions and millions of users. So if you have any question or you go to the forums, it's very likely that you get an answer or you get code samples and any sort of help that you may imagine. And the project itself is being actively contributed worldwide. The also interesting thing about R is it has a really interesting extensibility model through packages that allows a lot of people to contribute constantly to it and add new functionality. You see anything from, you know, graphical interfaces and plotting, and even academia launches their new research sometimes through R packages for machine learning and predictive analytics. And so it has a very wide variety of those out there that people use. Some of them are the most popular ones. Some of them are a little bit more esoteric. But chances are you'll find something that matches a little bit of what you're trying to do in terms of statistical analysis. And so some of the common cases R is being used out there. I mean, there's many of them. I'm not going to go through the extensive list, but it really depends on what vertical you are and what you're trying to do. It's been, you know, done historically, started a lot with fraud detection on financial and retail, but it has expanded to include almost every vertical of the industry and helping, you know, understand data, improve the bottom lines of companies, you know, create more personalized offers and such. And you can go through this list later if you're really interested and touches a little bit more on your particular area. So R has been on a tear. I mean, in the last couple of years, we've seen, you know, the growth of it really jump almost to the top of the list of the languages. If you consider C and C++ kind of the same language, R is the fifth most used tool out there. This is based on an IEEE Spectrum, you know, survey that was done recently, and I predict this this momentum will continue to carry on, and it may, you know, pass maybe Python as one of the most used languages. But R, you know, has some challenges. One of them is technical. The other one is really business related. The technical one is, R was never meant to, was not built with the modern scale-out architecture that we see today in systems like Hadoop, where there's a share nothing and ship code towards the data. It was really built for having everything in memory and do processing locally. That creates a lot of issues in terms of data movement because it's really expensive to move the data all over to a single box, and it also creates this, you know, vertical scaling where you need to buy a bigger and bigger and bigger machine if you want to, you know, process more data. There are a couple of libraries and packages out there that allow to do multi-core and allow some parallelism, but they're really difficult to use, and they're not easy to grab your existing code and really port it there. R on its own also lacks implicit parallelism functionality, so it doesn't have like more modern languages in terms of threading and whatnot. You really have to go down a couple of levels or build your own packages if you really want to do that. The second challenge is it's not unique to R. It's a little bit more broader to open source projects in general, where some businesses, in order to take a production dependency, want to have some level of support and SLA on the other side. That doesn't mean that R is not being used for production today, but some companies really want that peace of mind that comes with it, being able to pick up the phone and getting a response in a certain amount of time, where they'll get, you know, persistent patches and security updates if there's anything happening. So the community itself doesn't provide that on its own. And so our server, which is Microsoft's answer to some of these challenges, is really a scale-out and enterprise-ready R server, our implementation. So we actually took the packages interface and extended it and created this distributed R and scale out components and a bunch of others to really be able to scale out and get more performance out of R. And one of the tenets and the principles that we wanted to do is you don't have to learn anything new from R. You can go to your local laptop, use it there, run your code, and as you're scaling up to more and more data, you just take your existing code into the cluster and very easily scale out to a lot of machines. This allows you to process small gigabytes to start to do your training and analyze the data to really grow to multiple terabytes of data as big as your cluster is. And we've seen tremendous performance improvement with this technology, because not only we can scale out, we have actually improved some of the existing new functions. We provide new parallelized algorithms. I'll talk to you a little bit about more what those functions and algorithms are. We continue increasing them, but we've seen, you know, performance improvement over SAS, which is a common competitor to R being used in companies today. The other thing is, obviously, there's enterprise class support. So you get Microsoft backing on the product itself, and you get to line to be able to ask questions and get responses. You get the updates and everything that you would expect from a Microsoft supported product. Also, as a Microsoft product, you get really good integrations with a lot of other tools, and that integration continues to grow as we release new and more features. You get, you know, operationalization and deployments through other tools like Azure ML. You get, you know, IDE integrations to Visual Studio with the new announced R tools for Visual Studio, and this will continue to grow. The other thing that's important to notice is, even though today I'm going to talk about the cloud version of our server is not unique, it's not a cloud-only product. This highlights a little bit of the strategy of Microsoft to be able to go from prem to the cloud. And so you can install this on-prem. We recently announced it under SQL Server, but you can also take your Hadoop existing infrastructure. If you like some of the tools and the data that you have is in a Hadoop cluster, you can go and install it on your favorite distribution. But today I'm here to talk to you about what you can do to take it into Azure Cloud and through Azure Insight, HD Insight. And a little bit more about our server. So our server, again, it's not a fork of the open source code. We didn't take anything and created our own language. We really are 100% compatible with open source R. That means that if you already know R and have R investments or R packages that you like, you can come and bring them in. Everything will work just as it is today. The thing that R server really provides is this wide range of scalable and distributed R functions. We use this package concept, and the functions are really prefixed with this RX nomenclature. Some of the functions are really new. Some of the functions are just parallelized versions of functions that you know. For example, GLM, which is a very popular linear model function used in open source R. The Scalar implementation is RxGLM, and that scales up really dramatically. And there's a bunch of others, and I'll show you a slide a little bit later, some of those functions. The other thing that's pretty unique about our server is if you have a function today that you're already using in production or that you really like, but you always wanted to parallelize it, then we provide that functionality in our server. So, for example, you can take your function and assign different input parameters or different input data sets or just run it multiple times in as many machines as your cluster of, and really, really fast. You could do that on your own and create just some very complicated logic, but we take care of all that infrastructure and all that plumbing, all the deployments that needs to happen in order for this function to work correctly. This is really an ideal scenario for things like parameter sweeps, simulation, or multiple runs of the data. And so here is a list of some of the distributed and parallelized algorithms. I'm not going to go through them one by one. As it was mentioned before, these slides are going to be up and available, and you can take a look at them and see if, which ones are there. But there's anything from data prep, so we added things for input, for importing from different sources, to do some feature extraction manipulation. There's obviously the descriptive and predictive statistical function, as well as sampling, and most of the, you know, the very common machine learning algorithms. You can take a look at this list later, as I said, but it's pretty quite extensive, and it continues to grow. And so today, what we're going to show you, and it's one of the things I'm really excited about, is we announced this morning the integration of our server in HD Insight. So HD Insight is the managed version of Hadoop that Azure offers on the cloud. And if you're not familiar, Hadoop has also become the lingua franca for big data manipulation in general. They created, and HD Insight is the offering that we have. And so for advanced analytics, Hadoop already has some technology, Spark, that's also getting a lot of momentum. And that's already been offered as part of Hadoop for a couple of months. Today, we're just, I wanted to let you know that we upgraded to the latest version, and so you can use the 1.6 version that has all the latest capabilities. But really, what we're offering and what we're doing today is the R server, which is part of the premium SKU. So the premium SKU on HD Insight is an add-on price to existing Hadoop cluster, and this allows you to take your skills that we talked about, if you know R or if you have people who are familiar with R, and bring them into the cloud with your data. So basically, if you're familiar with R, you can come and use Spark as for data manipulation. For example, Spark is really great for doing things like joins and feature extraction on a very large scale. But then you can take the power of all the R functions and everything I just talked to you about through R server for doing big computation. And what we did is we integrated this on top of the Spark and Hadoop framework. That means that as long as your Spark and Hadoop cluster can scale, so can, you know, the R server and Spark can scale on top of it. So you'll get more performance improvements and more scalability improvement. And we build that on top, obviously, of blob storage and data lake storage, which provides an HDFS-like interface to our server in Spark, so you can query your data or process your data no matter where it comes from. And for those who are more familiar with Spark, we all always offer the Scala and Java interface and also the notebook interface that you can connect into. So that's in a nutshell. I'm really excited to turn over to Mario. He'll talk to you a little bit more about the inner workings and actually show you what this looks like for real with a small demo.
Thank you, Ronnie. This is Mario. Hello, everyone. Thanks for joining us. And we're going to start by, I'll start my section by diving into the R server on HD Insight architecture. So in this architecture, there's a master R process running on an edge node of the cluster. When that process needs to perform a computation over all the data using all the nodes of the cluster, it uses Apache Yarn and Spark to communicate with R worker processes running on the data nodes. those worker processes, each of those worker processes will read a portion of the data, process a portion of the data, and then the partial results from each worker are aggregated and brought back to the master R process on the edge node. Then that process can either return the results to the user, or if in the case of an iterative algorithm, the process can determine whether another iteration, another pass over the data is required. Now, there are two ways for the data scientist to connect to the master R process. One way is using an SSH terminal connection and launching R at the command line. And then the other way is to use RStudio server. You can install RStudio server on the edge node, and then you can, using either Cygwin SSH or PuTTY, you can set up a port forwarding to that server. Then the data scientist can point their web browser at a URL, and we'll have a full IDE experience connected to the R master process on the edge node. My next slide, I'm talking about the advanced analytics lifecycle. And there's a typical life cycle that many projects go through, which begins with preparing the data. This involves data cleaning, transformation of the data, and often joining multiple data sources. The next stage of the life cycle is the modeling stage, where we build statistical or machine learning-based models on a set of training data to create a classifier or a regression model. And then we will test the model on a test set and evaluate its performance, maybe iterate on improving the model. And once we are ready with the model and we want to put it into production, we can move to the operationalization phase. In this phase, we may deploy the model to another server or infrastructure where it can be exposed as a web service API and used by other business applications. And to demonstrate such a typical application, I'm going to choose an easy-to-understand example, which is the airline arrival delay prediction example. In this example, we're going to use a variety of these technologies together. We'll start with the cleaning and joining of the data, and we're going to use the SparkR package and its data manipulation functions for that purpose. Next, we'll do the modeling of the data, the training, scoring, and evaluating of a model. And for that, we're going to use the scalable statistical and machine learning functions of R server. Finally, we're going to do the deploy and consume steps, and that's going to be done using the open source Azure ML package that Microsoft has contributed, and we'll also be calling that from the R prompt in R server. So we'll be using two data sets in this demo. The first data set is an airline passenger flight on-time performance data set, which has over 20 years of data collected at over 300 airports, and it includes every carrier and every commercial flight over that time span. The second data set we'll be looking at and using is a weather data set consisting of hourly weather observations from over 2,000 weather stations. So the next step is to want to demonstrate provisioning a cluster. And for that demo, I'm going to switch to my live web browser view. So let me switch to screen sharing, and it will take a few moments to push out the screen shared view to the webinar participants, but now you should be able to see my Microsoft Azure portal, my dashboard to Microsoft Azure. And whenever I want to create a new VM or a new cluster in Azure, I click on the New button in the upper left. Now I have a variety of things I can deploy, like a virtual machine. In this case, I'm going to click the category data and analytics, and then we'll see HD Insight at the top of the list there for this is our Hadoop clusters in the cloud. It's very easy to set up one of these HD Insight clusters. We just have to fill in a few entries here in this simple form. It will take a minute or so. So I'll give the cluster a name. I will choose a subscription that I want to use for this cluster. I'll choose one of my subscriptions. Then we click on selecting a cluster type. The cluster type is really a new feature that has just been deployed last night. It's you're seeing something that hardly anyone else has seen before. It's brand new, and it's very exciting that we now have this ability to create our server on Spark clusters. Our server is going to be installed for us on all the nodes of the cluster, and I can't tell you how much this improves my life, because it's no longer a manual process of installing the application on the nodes of the cluster. So we click on Premium. It's being offered right now during the preview period at a 75% discount. We select that is our cluster type, and now we enter. The next step is to enter credentials. I'm going to enter a password for the administrative user, who is able to look at things like the Ambari dashboard. And I'll give a username for the SSH user, and I will supply a public key that will be used for authenticating that SSH user. So I just select the key that I want to use, and there I've established the credentials. Now the data source is another interesting field. The data source allows us to point our cluster at pre-existing data in Azure Blob Storage. And the reason why this is important is because this allows you to create a cluster, point it at some existing data, then do your computations, and when you're done, you can tear down that cluster, and you won't be paying for cluster time when you're not using it. Then you can create a new cluster, maybe the next morning, and point it at the same data source. Your data is there, ready to go. The next piece of information we get to supply is the number of workers. So we can select, I'll go with the default here, 4 workers in this cluster. And we can also select the type of node we want, how many cores. In this case, we're going to use D4 servers, which have 8 cores per server. And that's really all we need to do. We can click Create, and we'll have a cluster be provisioned for us. Let's now go to our Studio pane in my web browser. And here we're going to be able to see how we drive this all from R. We're really trying to make this very easy to use for the R native. Now, one thing we mentioned already is that there are that we've designed our server so that it can work in a variety of contexts. It can work on-prem or in the cloud. It can use a single node or multiple nodes in a cluster. So we have the ability to select we've basically separated out the where you want to run the script and what data you want to use with the script from what are the calculations you want to perform. That way you can put all of these things about where the script is running into one portion of your script, or in this case I've broken out into one small script called setComputeContext, and I can leave the other parts of my scripts alone where I'm actually doing the computation. That's a concept we call write once, deploy anywhere. So since we are running on a Hadoop cluster, I will I will point this to our Hadoop-compatible distributed file system by using this rxhdfs file system function. If we were running on a single node, such as a workstation or single node server, then I could point our file system at the native file system. Similarly, we can choose whether we want the computation to be done across all the nodes of the cluster using, in this case, Spark, and we do that by setting our compute context to rxSpark. This, by the way, is also new. As of went live last night, we're offering this rxSpark capability for the very first time. We've had capability to run using traditional Hadoop MapReduce. Now we have rxSpark as well. We're, in contrast, running on a single node, we would select the local compute context. Now I'll go on to the cleaning and joining script. The first thing I do in the cleaning and joining script is I source my setComputeContext script. Next, I load the SparkR library, and I can then specify environment variables for Spark, such as how much memory to make available to Spark and how many executors to use, and I then would start my Spark context. Next, I specify where my data sits. I specify the directories, And these directories hold hundreds of CSV files. That's the raw form of the data, the air data and the weather data. Then we're going to create a SparkR data frame using the readDF function. This will create a distributed representation in Spark of that data, so we can do Spark-based operations using the SparkR package. We'll similarly create a SparkR data frame for the weather data, again using the readDF function. Let's look at some of the cleaning and transformation functions. The first one we'll use is the rename function. This is a SparkR function that can be used to rename the columns of your data set. In this case, we're going from columns that were all caps to mixed case column names. Then we can select the columns that we want to retain and use in our data set. Here I'm using the select function from SparkR. That way we can drop columns that we're not interested in using. And also do simple math operations directly in SparkR. For example, we can divide all the elements in the departure time column by 100 and take the floor of that to round down to a full hour. For even more complicated operations we can do, such as we can aggregate an average a value. In this case, we want to average the weather readings. In case there's more than one reading per hour, we want to average all the readings for a particular airport in a particular hour so that we have one averaged reading per hour. And after averaging, we'll again do some column renaming. And now that we've done those steps, we're going to the cleaning and joining, cleaning and transformation steps, we're going to move to the big data join. This is pretty cool. We get to use SparkR's join function to join together these two large data sets, the airline on time and the weather data set. And the join condition is going to be that we're joining to the air data the weather information for the origin airport at the time of departure. That's going to be our first join. Then we're going to have a second join, which is going to join, since we join the weather at the origin airport, we also will join the weather at the destination airport. Again, at the departure time, because we want to make our prediction at the time of departure. So having performed those joins, we're now ready to write out our results. So we'll output the results of the join data. We'll output the join data set to, again, a directory of CSV files using SparkR's write.df function. We can shut down the SparkR context at this point because we're done using SparkR, and we remove any non-data files such as the success file that's generated in that directory of CSV files. Now we're going to import the CSV files into a compressed binary format that's provided by our server that we call XDF. Just for consistency, we're going to specify the schema or the types of all of the columns in our data set. It can automatically infer the types, but in a very large data set, sometimes it's more advisable for consistency to specify those data types if they're known in advance. Then we specify that we use the rxtextdata function to specify that we're reading from a set of CSV files, and we use the rxxdf data function to specify that our destination, we're writing to these binary files called XDF files. And then the importing into binary format is performed by this rximport function. And finally, once we've imported, we can look at the metadata info associated with these binary files, and we do that with the rxinfo function. And we'll see that our data consists of 80 files, 148 million rows, 22 variables. It's compressed. And we can see information such as the names of the columns, the types of the columns, low and high values, and factor levels. For example, that there are 26 different years in this data set. Great, so that's our cleaning and joining using a combination of SparkR and the ScaleR functions in our server. Next, we're going to go on to that second stage, that modeling stage in our typical advanced analytics lifecycle. And what we're going to do here is we're going to split our data into a training data set and a testing data set. Data is information up through and including the year 2012. We're going to use all of the years before 2012 as our training data. So we're going to use the Rx data step function, which is a function that is very flexible. It can be used to select rows using an arbitrary R expression, and it can also be used to perform transformations on those rows. Any transformation you can write in R, any R function you can pull from an R package can be applied with the Rx data step function, and it's applied at scale using the power of all the nodes of the cluster. So here we're using it to split out the training data into a training data set, and we will have another call to split out the testing data. In this case, the condition is, well, for testing, we're going to use data from the year 2012. So we're going to use the earlier data from before 2012 to make predictions on the 2012. We're going to build a logistic regression model, and we will use our standard formula language to specify the formula of our logistic regression model. In R's formula language, you specify the target variable, the variable you're trying to predict. That's specified to the left of the tilde sign in the formula. And in this case, it's RDEL15, which is arrival delay 15 minutes or greater. We're trying to predict whether or not that delay occurs. And then to the right of the tilde, we list all of the predictor variables that we will be using. Now, rather than using R's built-in GLM function for logistic regression, which runs on a single node and is limited to data that can fit in the memory of that node, we're going to use the scalable RxLogit function. This is not limited by memory, and it's also able to make use of all of the nodes in the cluster. But it still takes the familiar formula language that's used by the built-in GLM function. So it makes it easy to switch over to that function. We can look at the model produced by that RxLogit function, and we'll see from these three asterisks that all of the weather variables, in fact, are significant variables in the model. So it's a good idea that we did join it with the weather data set. Next, we can test our model by calling the RxPredict function to do scoring on the set of testing data that was the data that was not used by when training the model. Then we can call the RxROC function, which will compute the ROC curve and the area under the curve, and we can plot those, the plot here in our plot window. So a little bit on the ROC curve. The higher the ROC curve, which is the blue curve in this plot window, the better the predictions. And the height of that curve is measured by something called AUC, the area under the curve. It can be anywhere from 0 to 1, 0.5 being just chance, and anything above 0.5 is better than chance prediction. So in this case, you see we have an AUC of 0.66. It means that we are predicting better than chance, but that in addition to weather and knowing when the flight was supposed to leave and what day of the week it was and the date, there still are many other things that impact whether a flight is delayed or not. So there's only so much prediction you can make on the accuracy of the flight delay. Now, if we had included the departure delay and used the departure delay as a variable to help predict the arrival delay, we'd see the ROC curve and the AUC be over 0.9, maybe 0.92 to 0.94, because apparently the departure delay is a very good predictor of the arrival delay. But in this case, we did not include the departure delay. Now, I want to very quickly show you that we can use other models in a very similar fashion. In this case, I'll show you how we can use a tree-based model called Rx, which we do using the RxDTree function. There is an open source function called rpart, an open source package in R called rpart, and it has a function called rpart for decision tree estimation. Again, that is limited to a single node and the data that can fit in that memory. And this data set far exceeds the data that could fit in the memory of a typical node. So in this case, we'll use the RxDTree function, very scalable. It'll make use of the whole cluster. And Why are some of the reasons people use decision trees? Well, it provides an easy-to-interpret model, and it also can automatically capture interactions between variables. So that's why we use RxDTree. We can use the very same RxPredict function to test the RxDTree on testing data, and we can use the ROC, the RxROC function to compute the ROC curve for the tree function. Now let's move on to that third stage in our advanced analytics lifecycle. That's the deploying of a model and putting it into production. And then we're going to be using the Azure ML package for that. So we'll start by loading a saved copy of the model and converting the model from the RxDTree function object to an RPART open source model. Then we're going to define a scoring function that loads the RPART library and uses its predict function to score new data. And we can test out our scoring function locally by giving it some example data, and we will see that indeed it provides scores. It gives us these probabilities between 0 and 1 of delay. Next, we are going to publish the scoring function as a web service. We do that using the Azure ML CRAN package, the package that Microsoft has contributed to open source. It will, specifically, we're going to use the publish web service function. That will create a web service. Now, if we click over to my Azure ML dashboard, I can see the delay prediction service was published by me about an hour ago using that publish web service function. If I click on the web service, I will see information about that web service. I'll be able to see detailed API help. I can click here on the API link, for example, and I will get very detailed help on how to use the API. And importantly, it's really convenient because it provides you with some sample code. So you can use the sample code in your C#, Python, or R applications to make use of this web service in at your enterprise applications. Now let's click back to R, and I'll point out that using the Azure ML package is extremely easy to make use of that deployed web service. We just call the consume function of the Azure ML package. When I run the consume function, it's going to reach out to that web service, and it will return scores, and we can see there the scores were calculated. So now we've deployed our function into a web service. At this point, for example, we could tear down the cluster or use the cluster for other purposes because we're doing scoring via the web service. We can also do scoring in the cluster very efficiently. We can do large-scale batch scoring in the cluster using the RxPredict function that we used in our testing. Now let's switch back to the slides. I will stop the screen sharing, and we will jump forward a few slides to my next slide. Next slide that I want to show is just a summary of everything we just saw, because there were quite a few technologies there. So just so you have it clear in your head, we have HD Insight as our Hadoop cluster platform, running Spark on Yarn for distributed computing. We're using R server as the R interpreter. We've used the Spark R package for its data manipulation functions. And we've used the RevoScale R package, which is automatically loaded into R server, for its scalable statistical and machine learning functions. And finally, we've used the Azure ML R package. We use that to publish an arbitrary R function as a web service. Now, I'd like to talk about one more application very quickly. That's because I want to show that we're not limited to using the scalable functions that we provide in R server. In R server, we also provide functions that allow you to run your own custom functions at scale. And in this case, custom function we're going to run is a function that is for genetic disease risk prediction. It's a function from the Variant Tools package, which is a package that's part of the very popular open source R project called the Bioconductor repository. And this variant tools package was never designed with Hadoop in mind or parallelization in mind. But by using the parallelization functions in our server, we can run it at scale. We, in fact, have run this on a large quantity of data, the 1,000 genomes project, about 2 terabytes of raw data. We've run it on 8 clusters, 8 HDI clusters, representing over 1,500 cores, which are running simultaneously around the world in 4 different data centers. And it's been used by us to calculate disease risk, as well as calculating ancestry. And we've also been able to present it and expose it as a web service API, which means it can be consumed by phone apps, by web pages, or by other enterprise applications. So I think these two demos show that there are really 4 trends coming together that are making all this possible. The first is big data. We are using big data sets like the genetics data set that I mentioned, or for example, the Internet of Things data is providing very big data sets that are much larger than anything we had even a couple of years ago. We're making use of open source. The open source R engine, the Linux, Ubuntu Linux that we're using on the nodes of the clusters, and the Hadoop cluster system, those are all open source projects. Thirdly, we have the data science trends. We have universities teaching students to use R. Students are coming out of university with R skills, and academics at universities, researchers are using R as a way to publish their most recent research. They'll publish it, as Ronnie was mentioning, as a package, an extension package to R. And finally, we have the rise of cloud computing. The fact that a single individual, a data scientist, is empowered to spin up their own cluster with R installed, no IT overhead required. They can go ahead, make use of that cluster, they can scale it, increase the number of nodes, decrease the number of nodes at will, tear it down, their data is still stored in Azure. All of these things come together to make it possible to build these big data applications, such as the ones we've just seen. For more information, we have some links here. We can go to the HD Insight link for more information on HD Insight and HD Insight Premium, or the R Server link to read all about R Server, both on-prem and in the cloud. And we have a few polling questions, so 3 polling questions. I'm going to move to the first polling question so folks can you can all provide feedback, and then we can begin to answer any questions that, that have been entered into the Q&A window. So I'll just take a look at the Q&A questions, and a couple of my colleagues are helping to have been answering the Q&A questions, and if you wouldn't mind, any questions that are high priority, just mark those as high priority, and then I can address those high priority questions. So I see a question just came in asking, when would you suggest using the Spark R package versus the R server functions? It's actually saying the Spark ML package. So there are maybe 2 parts to that question. In Spark, we now have Spark R, which is the R interface to many of the data manipulation functions in Spark. And in Spark, there's also a package called MLlib, which is a package of machine learning algorithms that work in Spark. The MLlib functions right now only have limited exposure as R functions. They're mainly available as Scala functions, or I believe also as Python and Java functions. Only the GLM function right now is available through the Spark R interface. Now we expect that to grow, but that is a differentiator between that. You might use that to decide whether you're going to use the R server functions, because the R server functions will offer many functions beyond GLM. They'll offer tree-based functions. They'll offer the RxDataStep function, which allows you to apply arbitrary R code to your to your data. Those capabilities are not possible with the SparkR package, yet the SparkR package has a number of important capabilities, such as the joining capability. So they work very well together. Just looking at the questions and quick, easy question here about when will the video be available for review? I believe it's after about 24 hours after this webinar. There will be a recording available for playing back on demand, and we will provide information on where to find that recording. I see another question. Question about whether the Rx exec function, which is one of the R server functions, is compatible with Spark. Yes, it is. So you can use this Rx exec function. That's an important function when you want to call a third-party R function or a custom function that you've written. You want to have that be run at scale across all the nodes of your cluster. You can use either the Rx exec function in R server or the Rx data step function. Now, this is a question on how to scale existing R packages to run on a Hadoop cluster. And you have two possible approaches there. One is in an existing R package, if there's corresponding functionality in the R server already, for example, the RxDTree functionality in R server, you can use that functionality in place of the existing R package, like the RPart package. Now, if there is not existing functionality already in R server, then you can use the RxDataStep function to run the functions from the existing R package in parallel. Now, it depends on what application you have. If it's any sort of problem that can be easily parallelized, such as scoring, then it's very easy to write to use the RxDataStep function to run your existing R functions at scale. However, there are other functions that will require some form of aggregation to be done after portion of the function has been run on all of the data, and in that case, you can use a two-step process, which also uses the RxDataStep function. So basically, you're writing a parallelized version of the function, and you're using the RxDataStep function as the way to run the elements of that parallelized function at scale. And I'll take a look here at our many, many questions coming in. Fortunately, a lot of them are getting answered by my colleagues. So there is a question here about why use Spark to do ETL example joins if you can do joins using simple ETL tooling. One of the points to be made here is that the joins we're doing are being done on potentially unstructured or semi-structured data, and maybe very large data, and maybe coming in from various sources like the Internet of Things. That's sort of the application sweet spot for Hadoop clusters is working with bigger data sets that may be semi-structured or unstructured, and that's where Spark's functionality can be differentiated from some of the simpler ETL tooling because of its scalability and its ability to work with different data types. Another point is that SparkR, and as well as all the R functions we've looked at, are scriptable. So it might be preferable for your processes to script the data set steps you want to do. Some people will prefer to use a GUI tool. There are GUI tools that are becoming available, which will also be offered in HD Insight Premium. But for other applications, a scriptable language is preferable. So here's a question about can we implement Spark R package on-prem in the Hortonworks environment? And I think I alluded to the fact that we have just made RX Spark Compute Context available in the cloud in this preview, HD Insight Premium Preview, and we will be offering that after the preview period. It will become available on-prem as well. So yes, it will be possible to use use this on-prem as well. And here's a question I've seen before about survival functions. Is it possible to use the Cox proportional hazards model, which is a CRAN package, to do survival analysis? This can be done using the RX data step function or the RX exec function, provided that your analysis can be broken into essentially partitions of data or subsets that can be performed side by side. So if you wanted to perform survival analysis for like many different drugs or many different machines at the same time, you could run these different survival analyses side by side in parallel. Or if you had different models that you wanted to apply, you could test those in parallel. Or if you have different data sets, you can apply those to in parallel. That's to be distinguished from if you had just one giant data set where you wanted to create one survival function model on that, then that's the case where you'd have to do more work to parallelize the algorithm because the distributed version of the algorithm doesn't currently exist or is not part of that implementation. I see there's a question about usage of R with Visual Studio. And in fact, there's good news there because a package is coming out for editing and running R from within Visual Studio. So Microsoft has really taken to R, and we're adding R as another language that can be worked with in Visual Studio, just like we recently introduced the Python tools for Visual Studio, which has had great adoption. We are also introducing an R tools for Visual Studio, which is a very nice full-featured GUI for R in Visual Studio that includes a really good code completion and especially very nice debugging functionality and graphics. All of the features you'd like in a full-functioned R IDE is coming to Visual Studio. And I see one other question here asking about why would I use R server versus just building in Azure ML? So we saw a bit of Azure ML today when I was using the Azure ML web service to deploy an R function, an R model that we created using R server. There are two points to differentiate Azure ML and R server. One is that Azure ML is more GUI based. So if your R is not your first choice, for example, you just want to use R in certain transformation functions and modules, but you'd like to have a GUI based workflow for doing data science, then Azure ML will work well for that. But if you want to, if you really are an R native and you want to script all of your computations, then R server gives you that capability. That's one differentiation. The other differentiation is that the R server does run in the Hadoop infrastructure. So it's highly scalable, and it can be used with many other components of the Hadoop infrastructure, such as Spark and the Spark R package. And I see that we're almost out of time now. So at this point, I think I will wrap up the Q&A section. And I think Rahi may have some last words for us. Thank you all very much for your attention. I really appreciate all of the attendees joining today. Thank you.
Thanks, Ronnie. As a reminder to all the attendees, we'll be sending out the slides and a recording of the session shortly. Thanks, everyone, for filling out the poll questions, and thank you for joining us. Have a great day.